When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Hello, I'm Mike McDowell.
And I'm Simone Carlos.
Welcome to Business Roots on Talk Radio Europe, the show which shines a spotlight on foreign business owners right here in Spain.
Whatever your business, this is the place for you.
It makes no difference to us whether you're a sole trader or you employ dozens or even hundreds of people. We'd like to hear from you. Our guests are all foreign owners of businesses in Spain. Listen to their stories, benefit from their experience, and maybe take exception to what they say. You might know better. Also, our experts, including Simone, tackle specific questions about establishing and running a business here. The idea is we all share our stories and we help each other out because we are stronger together, as they say. If your business is going well, let us know why. If you're struggling, perhaps we or some of our listeners can help you out.
Maybe you haven't even started yet. Maybe your business is just an idea. Listen to Business Roots to find out how your fellow foreign business owners overcame hurdles and took on Spanish red tape.
And you can even feature in this program. Drop us a line, tell us your story. Let us know if you have a question about a particular aspect of starting or running a company in Spain, big or small. As always, we'll answer a few of those questions later on in the show. So send us an email. The address is simone@tre.radio. That's simone@tre.radio.
But right now, find yourself a comfortable chair and join us for Business Roots on Talk Radio Europe.
Later in the program, I'll be chatting to top Swedish chef Alf Haldin, whose new eating experience in Marbella offers Michelin-star level dishes, but at pretty ordinary prices. Alf is a very interesting guy. He has great advice for anyone thinking of opening a business in Spain serving food, and he's had a lifelong connection to Marbella because his grandmother used to own a restaurant there. It was almost inevitable that he would make his way back to the jewel of the Costa del Sol.
Yeah, I've dreamt about opening my own restaurant for around 20 years, but the dream of Marbella started a few years back. Let's say that for about 12 years, I wanted to move back to Spain and live in Spain. And I want to look at my cooking more as an art than just fill stomachs. And if you're going to do that whilst living in Spain, Marbella is one of the few places where you actually have the market. And that is why my focus became Marbella. Barcelona, you could do it as well, I guess. But something drew me to Marbella, probably, you know, having it in my blood, so to speak, being a part of my heritage.
And don't forget, in part three, we will once more be tackling some of your questions.
Once again, we've had a whole bunch of emails during the week, and we'll be going through a few of those. We can't respond to every single one of them in a single program, but all correspondents will receive a reply, and Simone will give you details about joining our online community.
Our first guest this week is Luke Walker. Luke recently moved to Valencia. He runs an online business and he plans to launch another business in the next few weeks.
As I mentioned in last week's program, what Luke has to say about the Spanish system of registering a business and paying your taxes is interesting, and I promise it will strike a chord with any of you who are considering starting your own company in Spain, especially if that business is online and you could legitimately call yourself a digital nomad. I think not only will it strike a chord, but also it'll give you some ideas about how you might do things differently, about how you might live in Spain, for example, but register your business in Cyprus or Estonia. This is worth a listen. Luke's a good guy, and he's done his homework.
My name's Luke Walker. Been living in Valencia for a year now with my wife and two children. We had our second child in Valencia, and I've got a little business called the Timber Design Studio, providing timber frame designs for the construction industry in the UK. I've lived abroad for 10 years and I've lived in various different places around the world. Before we came to Spain, we were living in Albania for a year. Our first child was born in Georgia and our second child has been born in Valencia. But when we found out we were pregnant, we thought, let's go back to Europe. So when we looked at it, Spain had the kind of easiest route in. It was going to be better for the education and the schooling for the kids. So really, it's the main reason for coming was more for them than for us, as it doesn't really benefit me tax-wise coming to Spain.
Is your business based in the UK?
Yeah, well, all my clients, I'm autonomo here, so all my clients are in the UK and Ireland. I would be keen to branch that out, and the new business that we're setting up beyond the lawn, that will hopefully, although we're going to start it in the UK, that will hopefully be an online platform that can be accessed all over the world eventually. That's the kind of aim for it. But it's all online, my work.
Hmm. And we'll talk about your new business in a moment. But how did you find the process of setting yourself up as autónomo?
Setting yourself up in Spain was much harder than setting yourself up as autónomo. I think the key with autónomo is finding a good gestor. I know a number of people who've had really bad experiences. It's caused them more problems and it's been a nightmare. I was lucky because I did some research and found someone who lives just outside of Valencia who's been amazing. It's all been really efficient. She's handled everything, and I think that is one of the keys to it. I know there's a lot of people online trying to find the cheapest option. And I don't know if my hair store is cheaper or more expensive, but I think it's somewhere in the middle. I think going really cheap on it can cause you more problems. And it has made it a lot easier for me. And she gives me other bits of advice. And when we did the yearly tax return, she found savings because she understands the system. She found discounts that I could get because I've got two children. Various little things. So, yeah, that would be my tip to anyone.
Do you mind my asking, how much do you pay monthly for your gestor or your gestora?
It works out about €65 a month. So I've just had the bill. I've got to do my quarterly returns. Well, I've already done them. I've got to pay her. So it works out to about, plus the tax, it works out to about €190 for 3 months. And then, so that's every quarter. And then at the end of the year, I think it was for her to do the Modelo for the year. I think it was only €100, and people that is obviously an extra cost, and it's something that some people might not want to pay for. And I know people are trying to get it cheaper, but I don't think it's too bad for the peace of mind and another job that I don't have to think about.
Thinking of Spain as a whole, that seems like you know, very, very good value. Tell me a little bit about Beyond the Lawn, because I'm interested in this because this is a business that you are setting up in Spain, from Spain?
Essentially what it is, it's an idea to bridge the gap for garden rooms. People in Britain and around the world like the idea of an additional space in their garden. And the options for people at the minute are to go onto YouTube or try and work it out themselves with all the components required. And the second option is to go and pay a very high price from a garden room manufacturing company. So the idea of Beyond the Lawn is to bridge the gap in between from someone who wants to DIY themselves, to have all the design and be in control of it, and also be able to outsource some parts of it, maybe to just to get the kit supplied or just to get someone to help them erect it. So they're digital kits. You get all the plans for the floors, roofs, walls. You get a 3D model. You get all the detailing of all the various different eaves, floor, etc. You get all the material quantities for the whole thing, from the cladding quantities to the skirting board lengths to the number of light fittings. And you get a 44-page construction guidebook in there, so it's every step of the way you've got an explanation of what you need to do. Yeah, that's the plan. The product's all there. We're just kind of getting all the marketing stuff together at the minute.
So these units for which you supply the plans, it could be somebody who wants a recording studio at the end of the garden, or it could be somebody who maybe has a farm or a small holding and wants to get 10 of them built as glamping pods.
Yeah, anything. They can be used for absolutely anything. And again, they're all designed at the minute. The ones off the shelf are all designed to be sans planning permission as well. So they're all under a certain height. And
can I interrupt you there, though? That's planning permission in the UK.
Yeah. Britain's planning regulations are probably a bit more strict than most countries, especially outside of Europe.
I don't think they'll be anywhere near as strict as Spain. But what I wanted to ask you now, because you are in this process, so you are launching a startup, and I wondered, how do you rate Spain as a place to launch a new company?
If I was starting from scratch as a young person, I'd be really, really scared of going into this, because mainly because of this autonomo, you're going to have to start as an autonomo. From what everything I've read, if you wanted to start a limited company here, an actual proper company, the setup fee and the initial costs of that and the earning requirements to do that off the bat seemed so, because it was something that I considered. It seems so far out of reach. You're going to need quite a substantial investment off the bat to get that started. So the logical way, like for instance in Britain, you start off as a sole trader, then you might set up a limited company. And so it's the same kind of route here, where the logical thing for people like me would be to start up as an autonomo and then maybe develop that into a proper business. But there is, when you read about it online, there's a lot of debate about which is best, and there's a lot of fees and things that come with setting up those businesses, which seem to me to make it untenable. So the idea of me setting this business up in Spain, this new business, doesn't seem to make sense. It would make more sense for me to register it outside of Spain, say, even if we registered it in Cyprus or Estonia or somewhere else with a lower tax, and then just remain on autonomo here. So the business would be set up in another country, and then I just continue to be autonomo here, which makes it just confuses me, because it seems like a flawed system. It's not, there's no system here to encourage people to set up businesses and to give advantages or to give people a soft launch. Even with autonomo, my business is already set up, so I've got a kind of a broad income earning every year. Like for the first year it's around £80, but obviously next year,
that's your autonomo monthly fee,
this will suddenly just skyrocket, and it's gonna multiply by maybe three or four times. But like it takes time for business. If I was starting here as from scratch, And I remember my first few years with this, with the Timber Design Studio, my earnings weren't very good. I was struggling to find clients. I was learning how to do the business and learning things about how to work. And it just wouldn't be sustainable for a sudden £80 a month plus the Hestor fees would already be a lot. And then to add on, in a year, I've got to be reaching this income because my SS payments are going to shoot through the roof. And the tax is already quite high. So, yeah, I feel it's a shame. I feel there's a bit of a tax on entrepreneurship here. And I think they're missing opportunities that other countries are more open to. And I think they don't want people to be entrepreneurs. That's the impression I've got. And I think it's a bit sad.
I think part of the problem in Spain, as well as the language barrier, is that they don't advertise the various schemes that help startups and help new businesses. They don't advertise them very well. So you don't know about them. So, for example, there is a state-owned company called Enisa here in Spain, right, that offers very low interest loans to startups without personal guarantees. There's also CDTI loans and grants available for tech startups particularly. Also in Spain, like in your first two profitable years, they cut your corporate tax to about 15%. And I know that doesn't really compete very well with like you were saying about Cyprus or Estonia or even like Puerto Rico, where corporation tax is like 4%, or Hong Kong, where it's 8%. You know, it doesn't compete. So it makes sense to say, if you've got an online business, to set it up somewhere else altogether. I think also in Spain, which you don't have in Britain, you've got access to EU startup money, right? Like Horizons Europe offers funding to especially tech businesses, especially online businesses like your own. The problem is finding out about them. I mean, have you found in the process of setting up your new business, have you found people suggesting to you these various options?
No, I've not. And like, obviously, I'm on all the groups and I listen to people talking about what they're doing. So that's how you often, like in the Digital Nomad Spain groups, and you learn a lot about it. And I've never heard anyone talking about those kind of things. And yeah, I'm sure there are options.
There's a good startup accelerator at the Polytechnic University in Valencia, which has a very good reputation. It's certainly worth looking into. And here on the program, we are going to be featuring a number of these different schemes around the country, from Gibraltar all the way up to Barcelona, mostly along the Mediterranean coast, but inland to Madrid as well, over the coming months, and hopefully helping people, you know, at least informing them that these schemes exist and giving you an idea of how you can get involved. Other than your business concerns, are you enjoying life in Spain?
Yeah, I think it's a nice way of life in terms of, I find it a lot more relaxing. I love the Almuerzo. People are quite relaxed here and chilled out, which I do like. I don't really feel like I've had a chance to enjoy Spain yet. The place that you move to is not always the place that you'll stay, and it doesn't always necessarily suit you straight away. So there's things about Valencia that we're not really enjoying. So there's potential that I'll enjoy it more when we move out of here. And also, it's been a hard year with the move, furnishing an empty four-bedroom apartment, buying everything that we needed for a new child, trying to set up with all the Spanish bureaucracy to get registered with the health service and everything else, having the birth and the birth certificate. Like, there's just been, it just feels like it's just been one thing after another to try and sort out. So I think after this year, I'm hoping now we can start to maybe enjoy Spain a little bit more, and we can start to explore and go to these nice little towns.
And that was Luke Walker in Valencia. Many thanks to Luke for taking the time to talk to us. You're listening to Business Roots on Talk Radio Europe, and we want to hear from you. Tell us your story, ask a question, or make a suggestion. The address is simone@tre.radio.
In part two of the show, we are off to Marbella and a fabulous new restaurant offering the kind of food you would ordinarily only find in restaurants with Michelin stars, but at prices that will not break the bank. I'll be talking to chef Alf Haldin in a couple of minutes. Stay with us.
Business Roots with Mike and Simone. This is Business Roots on Talk Radio Europe. Making sense of business in Spain.
Welcome back to Business Roots on Talk Radio Europe. I'm Simone Carlos.
And I'm Mike McDowell. And the stars of this show are foreign business owners right here in Spain.
And that might be you.
If you are an expat, transplanted from anywhere in the world, and you have a business here in Spain, or maybe you have an idea for a business and you don't know where to start, drop us a line and tell us your story. Because whether you're a stand-up comedian or the boss of a banking corporation, if you make your living in Spain, we would like to hear from you.
The whole point of Business Roots is that all those lessons you've learned can help other expat business owners to either improve their existing businesses, or it could help them get a new idea off the ground. If we all help each other, everybody's lives will be improved.
And equally, experiences shared by other business owners might well help you, inform you, or inspire you, because we are all in this together. And do let us know if you have a question about a particular aspect of starting or running a company in Spain. Either Simone or one of our featured business owners will have the answer.
Send us an email. The address is simone@tre.radio. That's simone@tre.radio. Earlier we heard from Luke in Valencia. Mike, where are we headed next?
Well, yesterday I had the great pleasure of chatting to Swedish chef Alf Haldin, who has taken over a restaurant a few minutes from the centre of Marbella. Alf's an interesting character, that's for sure, with a long-standing family connection to the city. He's dreamed of opening his own place for 2 decades, and it finally came to fruition just a few weeks ago. And believe me, Alf and his delicious food come highly recommended.
I worked in 3 different restaurants at a total up to 4 Michelin stars. 1 with 2 Michelin stars and 2 with 1 Michelin star.
Wow.
But none of them have been mine, right? Obviously, I've just been a part of the kitchen team. I started my journey at a 1 Michelin star restaurant when I was 17 in the kitchen as a student, and then I got a job after being a student for a year.
So tell us, what does the King of Sweden like to eat?
Oh, he used to love foie gras. I remember that because it was a big thing when everyone found out that foie gras was force-fed and everything. So we stopped serving it because it was against popular opinion. And the king was very upset one evening in a December night because we didn't have foie gras in the house for him. So I do know that he loves his foie gras.
Yeah. And were you cooking at the palace or did he come to your restaurant?
Both. I've been to the castle of Stockholm, being a part of the team that cooks for the king and his guests. And he used to come and visit the restaurant that's called Basement of the Opera that's in Stockholm.
I want to zoom back in time a little bit and ask you about your grandmother and her connection with Marbella.
She used to live in Marbella and run restaurants in the old town of Marbella, where my father was head chef and my mother was the head waitress. But this was before I was born, obviously.
Is that how they met, your parents?
No, they met in Sweden a few years before that, working at the same restaurant again. I guess it was about 4 years later they decided to move to Spain for a few years together to work for my grandmother, who already had the restaurant in Old Town. The restaurant was called La Reja.
Did your father then run a restaurant?
Yeah. Well, in Sweden, when they moved back, they bought a hotel and a restaurant in Sweden and started running it together, my parents. And they couldn't afford a house, so the first years of my life, we lived in the hotel. So I literally grew up in the hotel. I was in the kitchen with my father up until his death. He died the year I turned 7.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, it's 30 years now, so.
Cooking and food and hospitality, it's in your blood.
Oh, yeah, it very much is. I have a strong passion for it. I love my job, what I do. I create my own plates. I create my own recipes. I've created over 100 different recipes for different things.
Was it always going to be Marbella? Was it always going to be the place where you opened your own restaurant, your first restaurant?
Yeah, I've dreamt about opening my own restaurant for around 20 years. But the dream about Marbella started a few years back. Let's say that for about 12 years, I wanted to move back to Spain and live in Spain. And I want to look at my cooking more as an art than just fill stomachs. And if you're going to do that whilst living in Spain, Marbella is one of the few places where you actually have the market. And that is why my focus became Marbella. Barcelona, you could do it as well, I guess. But something drew me to Marbella, probably, you know, having it in my blood, so to speak, being a part of my heritage.
And is there a concept behind your restaurant? We should say that your restaurant is called Tagus. Am I pronouncing that correctly? Tagus.
Currently named Tagus. And we took over the restaurant in the beginning of the summer. One of the old owners stayed with us during the summer. So I took complete control of it less than 2 months ago. But the plan is to next year change the name from Tagus to Enigmas. And Enigmas is the concept I want to bring to the world. Once again, I like to do it as an art form. Therefore, Enigmas, the concept would be that be it the starter, the main, or the dessert, it's all going to be covered either by blown bubbles or by glass domes. And we're going to fill it up with different smokes and different smells, and so that every plate is an enigma until it's uncovered by the guest or the waiter who brings the plate to the table. For now, we're managing it as we took it a little bit. I constructed the menu to be more of my own menu. But eventually, for next year, we're launching marketing campaigns and stuff and want to come to the concept of Enigmas.
So it's mystery and surprise and that element in the presentation.
Yes, exactly. So far, I have 23 plates on the menus for Enigmas, the first menu that we're going to release. Every plate on that menu has been very thoroughly thought through for all the textures, flavors, and color combinations, for the smells that will come out from different smokes. So you can have it smelling like apples, smelling like truffle, smelling like cognac, the smoke that comes out. So everything is going to be, it's going to be an art for all the senses, is what I want to deliver anyway. It's going to be an experience.
I guess you can't really categorize that. I mean, we couldn't say, for example, that it's traditional Spanish cuisine with your personal twist or interpretation. It's beyond that, right?
Yeah, thank you. That's a really, really good way to put it. I don't like restrictions. I like to just have full-on creativity, and that way you can create so much more interesting plate. It doesn't matter if one plate has both Japanese cooking and Mexican cooking. Why would I care? As long as it fits together and is a beautiful thing that tastes good.
I know you've been, you know, fully in control of this restaurant only for a few weeks, really. But I wanted to talk to you a little bit, just a little bit, about, you know, running the business. And I know you have a partner who takes care of the majority of the paperwork, you know, registering the SL and dealing with the tax man and all that sort of thing. But have you been involved in renewing the licenses to operate the restaurant? You know, whether that's for hygiene or for serving food, and, you know, was it an easy process?
If you want to open a restaurant in Spain, you have two different ways on going ahead about it. And you can do what's called a trespasso, which is what we did. So we basically bought into to this location, and they already had a running restaurant, and then we paid the current owners to put our names on their licenses, or to simplify things, right? Mm-hmm. And that way you don't have to do all of the process, and you can cut down a lot. That's the easiest and fastest way to do it in Spain. Otherwise, it's a very, very hard process to go through. The only thing we've had to do then, you have some, like you say, the hygiene. You have to be approved and understand the hygiene rules of Spain and how you manage a kitchen and what to think about, which to me, if you compare Spain to Sweden, Although those rules are tenfold as much in Sweden, so that was really a simple process. The harder process is to actually do the SL, which fortunately I didn't have to do because I'm really bad at stuff like that. But like you said, I have a partner in it. I have two partners in it, honestly, but one of them managing all of these things and he's done a great job with it. But if you compare it with Sweden, everything is digital in Sweden and you just ID yourself over the internet and basically pay a fee for it and it's all solved itself. Here, it's not that simple. It's extremely tedious to go through all the paperwork and try to find where and how to do it. And you just have to have lawyers, basically. But then on the other flip coin, if you're going to manage a restaurant, all of the other rules to be able to serve alcohol or how to manage the kitchen, that is a lot harder to pass through in Sweden than in Spain. I have a lot more rules in Sweden about what you're allowed to serve and not.
Now, there's a great deal more to running a business in Spain than simply paperwork. And as a chef, you need a great relationship with your suppliers, right? Have these contacts been years in the making, or are you just finding your way at the moment?
I have built up some contact network here in Marbella for different for fruits and meats and cheeses. But also when we took over this Tres Paso, the restaurant was included in this group. You buy from the deliverers that this group has. So it's supposed to be a cooperation so you can get lowering prices by buying more. Like it's 40 plus restaurants are members in this group. So therefore they can push down prices. And this seemed like a really, really great idea. But for us, it's been more of a headache. It's been harder to buy from other people than you have to focus just on the group. So we'll see what happens with that. But
do you ever find yourself looking at the clock and wondering where on earth is the guy with the fruit or where on earth is the woman with the wine? Or
oh, yeah. I just have to say the fruit guy is always on time. But yeah, of course, it happens. It happens in Sweden as well, but not nearly as much as in Spain. It's almost every day you're gonna look at the time and wonder, where's my cream? Where's my milk? Where's my fish? Whatever it is, yeah. Spain is it's a lot of waiting for things.
Probably the secret is just to embrace the Spanish way.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. I'm 100% with you on that one. Just embrace and live with it. In Spain, when you live in Spain, you feel more free. Like in Sweden, it's more controlled. Everyone has to be on time. You feel more free in Spain. And that's one of the things that I love with Spain and why I like living here. And I think that if you like to be a more free-living person, then you have to accept the Spanish way of things, I think.
When you open a restaurant, do you consider the competition? Because in Marbella, you know, competition's pretty fierce. You know, there are a lot of great restaurants in Marbella. There's a Michelin-starred restaurant in town, and there's another Michelin-starred restaurant along the coast in Benalmadena, the caviar guy. And I wonder, do you go and try the food at rival restaurants in the area? Or do you rely on your own artistry to make you stand out and you don't need to check the competition?
No, I don't. I don't mind that much. It doesn't bother me. I don't care that much about my competition. I'm not looking at others. Like people told me, oh, you should go and eat at this and this restaurant. Maybe you'll get inspired. But I don't want to be inspired by others. I want to inspire others. I mean, people seem to like my food. I get a lot of great reviews. The last month we've had, I think, 33 reviews, all 5 out of 5 stars, all of them. I focus on my own and my own kitchen, my own creativity, my own plates.
What is it, do you think, about Marbella that draws people from all over the world?
Wow, good question. I mean, besides it being a beautiful town with beautiful beaches and I don't know, but it seemed to have started even before my birth, right? I'm not sure. No, I don't know what it is, actually. It is a beautiful town, but you can find a lot of beautiful towns that doesn't attract as much people. So who knows what started it, to be honest.
Well, you've been there 6 months now, and I wondered if sometimes do you think to yourself, I want to get away from the Ferraris and the Aston Martins and the super yachts and the fancy boutiques and the multi-million euro villas, and I want to find myself a little fishing village and grill sardines over a fire on the beach.
It's not everywhere in Marbella, the supercars and all of that. I lived a while, like 2 months in Puerto Banús. Then you can't escape it. Then it's there all the time. Then you see the cars as soon as you go out of your door. But now I live in Mijas, Calahonda, on the other side of Marbella, and you don't get drowned in it. It feels like you can always escape it, even in Marbella, if you want to.
Oh, thank you so much for talking to us. Remind us, where can we find Tagus?
It's in Rosario, outside of Marbella, so it's about 2 kilometers from the hospital Costa del Sol. And it would be lovely if people came to see us, to try my food and to try. We call it chef selection, so it's like the menu of the week. So every week I put up a new menu. It's 3 plates for 39 euros. And the whole concept is to try to come as close as possible to Michelin star level at a completely reasonable price. So it's 39 euros for 3 plates, including 1 drink and coffee. And I would love if more people came and tried it. And also, we're going to start on Sundays to have barbecues, open buffet for people to come there and eat meat, and a cold buffet with different types of salads and belongings. And I'm going to be out there in the air and barbecuing for the people. And I hope to see people come and test us out.
Many thanks to Alf at Tagus in the El Rosario neighborhood of Marbella.
And if you'd like to make a reservation, go to tagusmarbella.com. That's Tagus, like the river, T-A-G-U-S, marbella.com. And they're about 10 minutes in the car from the center of the city, heading east towards Fuengirola. Okay, now, if you tuned in last week, you will recall that we asked you a question about the increase in autonomo fees very likely to be introduced starting in 2026. Of course, Spain has an aging population. Pretty soon, the Spanish could be the longest living people on Earth. They are already second only to Japan, and the government needs to find more money to pay for the care and the health care, the expensive bit, of all these elderly people of all nationalities living here in Spain.
As we mentioned, one of the ways the government plans to find that extra cash is by imposing higher social security payments on the self-employed. We are going to take a closer look at these increasing fees in a few weeks. In last week's show, we asked you what you think about the government's plan, and you have responded.
As Simone mentioned, we'll be looking in more detail at the government's plans in a few weeks, and we'll read plenty of your emails in that specific show. In the meantime, we wanted to ask another question on the same subject, and it is this.
Will the expected increase in social security payments make you consider leaving Spain?
Yes, if you have to pay more, will you just pack up and leave? Let us know. The email address, of course, is simone@tre.radio. Meanwhile, as usual, we have had a mixed bag or mixed inbox of other emails this week, and Simone will be answering your questions after this short break. Stay with us.
This is Business Roots on Talk Radio Europe with Mike McDowell and Simone Carlos.
Welcome back to Business Roots on Talk Radio Europe. I'm Mike McDowell.
And I'm Simone Carlos.
This is the show that features English-speaking business owners in Spain and answers your questions about any aspect of owning or running a business here.
Whether you are just starting out or you've been here your whole life, We want to help make your Spanish business a success.
Drop us a line. Tell us all about yourself and your enterprise. Like I said earlier in the show, we are just as interested in freelancers as we are in huge companies with many employees.
The email address is simone@tre.radio. That's simone@tre.radio.
Once again, we've had a lot of emails since last week's show with plenty of questions for Simone to answer. Apologies if we don't feature your question in this week's programme. You will still receive a reply, and we might save your email for a later show, maybe a themed show a few weeks hence. So do keep tuning in. Okay, Simone, here is your first question. Owen asks, what licenses and permits do I need to open a bar in Spain?
Hi, Owen. To open a bar in Spain, you will need multiple licenses. The first of those is a licencia de actividad, an activity license from your local council, confirming that your premises meet health and safety standards. This involves submitting a technical project showing that you will comply with the regulations regarding capacity, layout, accessibility, kitchen features, fire safety, and noise insulation.
Owen, if you are selling alcohol, you will need a separate alcohol sales license from the Ayuntamiento. The requirement may vary by municipality, so you've got to check with your local town hall. We don't know where you live. You will also need a food handler's certificate for yourself and for every member of staff. These licenses are issued by your regional government. The food handling licenses are a regional thing. Also, if you plan to play music, you will need a music license too. Owen, please let us know how you get on. So our next email is from Eileen. She writes, do I need a tourist license to rent out my property on Airbnb?
Yes, you absolutely need a tourist license to legally rent your property on Airbnb or any other platform in Spain. This year, Spain dramatically tightened enforcement with fines up to €500,000 for operating without any license. Each region has its own application process, documentation requirements, and costs, which range from €1,000 to over €20,000.
Your property must meet minimum safety standards, including fire protection, adequate ventilation, proper furnishings, and external window darkening systems like blinds or shutters. You must also get consent from your neighbours or your community, if you're in an apartment block, your community of owners. And they have to vote, and there needs to be a three-fifths majority vote.
Applications are submitted via the Unified Digital Portal, and properties may be inspected before approval. Once approved, you receive a tourist license number that must be displayed on all online listings. Platforms like Airbnb are now required to remove properties without valid numbers.
Additionally, since July, all properties must be registered in the National Register of Short-Term Rentals, and you must also collect detailed information about all of your guests for every booking. Penalties for non-compliance are severe, and watch out because neighbours frequently report illegal rentals.
Requirements vary significantly between regions like Catalonia, Andalusia, Valencia, and the Baleares. So check your specific autonomous communities' regulations.
In Mallorca, where I used to live, short-term rental licenses are incredibly expensive. The hoteliers have a lot of power on the island, and they really don't want the competition. Right, the next question's from Jonathan. And it's a basic question. He says, what is a traspaso?
We have talked a little about traspasos in previous shows, and I think we will make a show all about traspasos in the coming weeks. So a traspaso is a Spanish concept in which you purchase an existing business, including its equipment, inventory, and customer base, but not the actual property premises.
Essentially, you're buying the right to continue operating the business under the existing lease terms. You take over fixtures, fittings, stock, and essentially the established reputation and the clientele.
As you can imagine, traspasos are extremely common in Spain's hospitality sector and can be very expensive, sometimes costing tens of thousands of euros or more, depending on location and business success. The advantage is that taking over a traspaso is less hassle than starting a business from scratch. However, be sure to check the existing opening license and speak to the town hall to make sure the license covers everything that you plan to do.
Yeah, don't forget, not all bars are allowed to serve food, and not all bars and restaurants, whether they're serving food or not, are allowed to play music. So you need to check that the license covers everything you want.
Make sure the previous owners have not broken any rules. If there are fines to pay, you might end up having to pay them.
And don't forget, the traspaso does not include the property itself, so you will remain a tenant. And it's common for the landlord to increase the rent when traspasos change hands. So make sure you hire a lawyer to represent your interests. Okay, we have time, a little bit of time, for a few more questions. And this is a good question from Kerry. She says, what exactly is a gestoría and do I need one?
The short answer would be yes. A gestoría is a professional service that deals with government agencies on your behalf. They handle all your paperwork for tax, social security, business registration, licensing and employment matters.
For foreign business owners, gestorías are invaluable because they navigate Spain's, you know, often very complex, decentralized administrative system where requirements vary between autonomous communities and municipalities. A gestoría can help register your autónomo or SL status, obtain NIA numbers, apply for business licenses, file quarterly tax returns, register your employees with Social Security, handle payroll, obtain construction permits, and of course liaise with the local councils where they may actually know people, which is always a good thing.
They are your fixers, your coordinators, basically. Most business owners in Spain, including locals, use a gestoría.
You will find plenty of English-speaking gestors if you don't speak Spanish. They're not cheap, but they are worth it, I promise you. Okay, that was a good question, Kerry. Thank you for getting in touch. Claire has written to ask, this is an unusual question, it's a good one, very specific. Can I operate a pet grooming business from my home?
Operating a pet grooming business from home is possible, but requires proper licensing and compliance with local regulations. You'll need a business license from your local town hall, the licencia de apertura. This confirms that your house meets safety standards for commercial activities.
Also, you are going to need to register with the Consejería de Sanidad, your local health council or health office. You'll need to demonstrate that you have a safe environment for animals, which basically means adequate space, proper ventilation, sanitation, safe storage of equipment and any chemicals that you're going to use, and of course, appropriate waste disposal.
Also, animal welfare regulations are strict in Spain, so you must comply with laws ensuring animals are protected from pain, injury, suffering, and disease.
Public liability insurance, which is a responsabilidad civil, is a must-have. Some local authorities do not allow home businesses because of noise or unpleasant odours or problems with parking. Again, as with every business in Spain, you are going to need to check with your local town hall. Your permits for a pet grooming business should cost about 1,500 euros. Okay, that's all the emails we have time for this week. Do keep sending them in. Apologies if we didn't get to your message. We will do our very best to work our way through all of them. And if we do respond to your question, do drop us a line to let us know how we did. Now, next week, we're going to be talking to Jeremy Robson, who is opening a very cool events space.
To be honest, I see a lot of negative stories online, and I don't think that really is fair, to be honest. I haven't experienced that many problems, to be honest. Like, I think Spain is really changing rapidly, and a lot of the complaints I don't think have been justified. So I have some other friends starting business, they're complaining about taxes all the time and how bad the administration is and it takes so long, and I haven't really experienced that. We worked with a local design firm, architecture firm, and they obviously helped a lot with processes. But my initial reaction to Valencia was, I came because it's exactly what I wanted, right? So I loved Valencia. I loved the lifestyle. I lived, like I said, in other cities, and for example, in France for a year, and the French won't even basically look at you if you don't speak perfect French, especially if you're British. So honestly, here I haven't had any kind of much negativity. I love the locals. I love the culture. It's very international, becoming more international, and I feel like they're really wanting a lot of people to start businesses now. Okay. They're giving a lot of benefits for the autonomo. I've talked to the government a lot, and they've said you have a lot of tax cuts for certain things. You can get a lot of loans for starting a business. So it's been quite a good impression. I think the only struggle has been some construction issues with the old buildings in Ruzafa, really. And I think that's it, to be honest. Yeah. I speak intermediate Spanish, and I'm taking lessons a lot, but I really need to rapidly improve for the business as well, because I don't want there just to be expats. But I studied Spanish in school, and it's never been a huge hard language for me. And I don't know what it is, but there's some vibe in Valencia. Everyone who moves here tells me, right? They all sense this. I don't know what it is. It's some kind of vibe, and it's a good vibe. There's a energetic vibe. It's a mix of cultures, you know. Like, I also love the Latino culture here as well. It's huge, and that music culture is brilliant. So it has some vibe. It's true.
That's Jeremy Robson feeling optimistic and poised to launch his exciting new business. Do tune in next week to find out all about the new Robson Studios and also why Jeremy thinks that Spain is a great place to live and a fantastic place to launch a new business. Okay, that's all we have time for this week. Thank you so much for listening.
And don't forget, the email address is simone@tre.radio. That's simone@tre.radio. See you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this program, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels, and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.